You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversation Podcast from Los Angeles. I'm Eugene Cordero. I was the guest on the last episode, but today I am your host, and my guest today again is Kirby Howell Baptiste. You guys may know her from Nomi Malone, a Herald team here in Los Angeles at the UCB Franklin or Sunset if they do one of them late night spots. What else would we know you from?
I used to do Maud Night.
Yeah, you did.
On the Robert Muta Whiskey Club. Mm-hmm. That was my first ever UCB team.
Was a mod team.
Was my mod team.
You did a mod team first and then you got into the improv.
Well, I hadn't actually ever, when I auditioned for Maud, I wasn't in a place where I could audition for Harold yet.
Got it. You were still in 401.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
With you.
You were in my class when you got onto a mod team? Or you just finished 401?
I think you were my second 401. So okay. That was, yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
So take us through your UCB-ish career then. So you took 101, 201, 301.
Yeah.
Did you take the sketch program?
I did, yeah. I took 101. And then when I was in 101, I learned about the diversity scholarship.
Got
and
it.
Then my 201, I got the diversity scholarship. And then I think when I was in 201, I applied to be an intern. So I think I got the diversity scholarship maybe twice. I got it for 2 and 3. And then I did my 2 401s and my 2 advanced studies through my through being an intern.
Got it.
So I did 101, 201, 301, 401. And then when I was in my second 401, I started in doing sketch. So I've done sketch 101 and sketch 201.
Got it.
Yeah.
And then you did a mod team and you were on a mod team for a while?
For a year and a half.
Uh-huh.
And then I auditioned whilst I was on that mod team. So after my first year of being on that mod team, I got onto a Harold team.
Got it. That's and great. It's Nomi Malone.
My first team was Dunk Tank.
Dunk Tank.
Yeah.
Got it.
We were together for a year, and uh-huh. Then after Dunk Tank is now Nomi Malone.
Got it. For how long now?
This is my second year on Harold Night, so I'm not quite 2 years old.
Got it.
On Harold Night. Got as it. A human, I am.
As human, you're at least 2 years old as a human.
Yeah, I mean, a lady never says her age.
Yeah,
but
yeah, but
I'm at least 2 years old.
I would say you're about you're 2 years old.
What does that mean?
Huh? You seem about 2.
Okay.
In the way that you improvise. So almost a year now with Nomi Malone then.
Yeah, almost a year. It goes really fast.
Yeah, it does.
Do you feel like it's gone really fast?
Yeah, I mean, to a
you've been on
extent,
the same team for years, but like, it's still, it goes like, I mean, how long have you been on The Smokes?
Since I moved here in 2009. So we're talking about almost 7 years on The Smokes now.
Yeah.
Or like 6 years. But so being on a Herald team for 2 years, but a different team for the last 2 years, what does it feel like to go from one team to another team? Because these teams get put together,
mm-hmm.
and in a way, I mean, when I was part of that making the team situation, we kind of like, hey, you 8 people, pretend you're best friends, kind of.
Yeah.
And also coworkers and also mind meld and also this thing. And I guess here's my question to you. Talk us through that process of the first month on each of these teams.
Oh, that's a great question. Ooh, I should ask that in mine. So the first month on Dunk Tank, mm-hmm. I was terrified.
Sure.
I had got on a Harold team the first year I auditioned, which I didn't expect. I sort of was like, I feel like I'm quite realistic, but I was like, I'll put one under my belt. Like, you'll probably audition twice. I'll put one under my belt, and then I'll be like, next year I'll be super ready.
Right.
And it was the first year ever auditioning, and I got on a team, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, great. I won this, but I'm like, I felt,
yeah.
And I was also playing with people that were on that team. There were one. Like half the team were people who had already been on teams before.
A mix of people that have been on Harold Knight a couple of times.
Yeah, and some for a long time. Some were on Harold Knight and then off Harold Knight and then back on Harold Knight.
Sure.
So like some veteran, like people who knew Harold Knight and knew the theatre. And also the thing about UCB as well is that like, because it was the first time I'd ever auditioned and I wasn't part of like the boot camp scene, I felt like I didn't know a lot of people still.
Right. Yeah. And if people don't know what the boot camp scene is, it's like another like practice group thing that they would meet every day for the most part.
Yeah.
In the mornings for a couple of hours and be running scenes.
Yeah.
And that was like a little group of their own.
Yeah.
That they're used to, like, it was almost like comedy college.
It was definitely. And I felt like I missed out on that. And so you also miss out on some of the social aspects.
Sure.
So when I was on a team, I didn't know. I mean, I was on multiple practice groups, but I'd seen certain people and were a fan of them when I saw them at Harold Knight.
Right.
And then I'd met a couple of the ones twice, but I didn't really know anyone on my team.
Okay.
So it's kind of terrifying. Our first ever like get together when we were choosing our team name was on my birthday.
Great.
That was fun. That was actually a really great, fun birthday. And so the first month was kind of intimidating.
Yeah.
Being on a new team.
So then how does the second team you're on, knowing that, okay, my first team got broken up.
Yeah.
And now I have a year under my belt of being on a Harold team.
Yeah.
How did you approach the second Harold team differently?
Well, I was way less nervous, obviously. It was funny because we were then the veterans. Like, there's a couple people from my old team that we moved over to this team together.
Yeah.
And so then... not that I was like, haha, I'm the veteran. You just feel it. You just feel like you know what you're doing. After doing four shows a month, every month for a year.
Right.
You're just comfortable. So I think what was different was I wasn't as nervous. I think I also wasn't as, after a team being broken up, I wasn't as precious about, like, I absolutely love this team, but it's more of a reality that it could be broken up.
Yeah.
Whereas on my first team, you're like, no way, man, this is going to go forever.
Right. Yeah.
So now I'm more realistic about it as just sort of part of the process is shuffling and changing and stuff like that. It also, it's tough as well because of the thing you were saying about like, here's seven people, be their best friend.
Yeah.
It takes a second, but then because you're together so much, like, you do become really close. I'm very close. I was very, very close with my first Harold team. And so that was so hard when we first broke up. And then in the time I've been on my new team, I'm extremely close to those guys as well.
Yeah.
Which is just kind of like, I literally see the people on my Harold team more than I see anyone else.
Right.
Which is and we are, and also this team is very sociable, so we, like, obviously we have practice, we have shows, and then people hang out. We see each other three or four times a week.
Yeah.
It's a lot. Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's a lot. Yeah.
It becomes part of your family or part of your friend, like your actual friends.
Yeah, like, yeah. I'm leaving at the end of August to go away for a while for work, and I'm terrified, truly terrified of not performing every week and not seeing my friends all the time. And it's so funny that, like, if you pull back from UCB and see the scale of it, most people would be like, what, who cares, you're going somewhere to do the job that you came to America to do. But for me, the idea of not performing every week gives me like terrible anxiety.
Why? What scares you? What do you think is going to happen, or what is your anxiety about being away?
It's not the idea of like, oh, people forget me or the social. It's just that doing shows makes me happier than most things in my life. Which, I don't know, I think it's nice. Maybe that sounds sad, but like shows or jams. Like the other night I did a show and then saw that there was a jam in the Inner Sanctum, and I was like, great, I'll go from that show and do the, like, I just love being on the stage. I love performing. I started in theatre, so I'm kind of like, so obviously this is like such immediate theatre.
Yeah.
It doesn't take months of preparation. You can just like, that hunger you have to be on a stage can be, I never know if it's sated or satiated. Can you say both? I think you say both, right?
I mean, I didn't know what you meant until you said satiated.
I thought it was your hunger can be sated or maybe it's satiated. Let's go with satiated, at least whilst here in America.
And now I get it.
Yeah, and you get it.
If you would have said the first word, I would have asked you a next question.
But that can be satiated immediately.
Yeah.
Every single night of the week.
Sure.
So it kind of becomes a bit like a drug where you're just like, I want to perform. I can perform.
Mm-hmm. Are you worried that if you're gone for a while that you're going to get bad?
I mean, I will get rusty. That's a fact I know, because like going home for 3 weeks and coming, you know, like when you go home for Christmas, you get rusty. I don't think I'll be bad. My fear is that, yeah, if you don't exercise a muscle, it weakens. Like, I think that muscle will weaken, and it would be nerve wracking for me. Let's say I got back on a Friday and I had Harold night on a Monday. I think I'd be like, we got to get at least three practices. I need to like...
Three practices?
Two. Friday. We could do Saturday, Sunday, and then show on Monday. Two practices. Got to get two practices in before.
Two practices, and why?
Because
what are you afraid of? What do you need to what gets rusty to the point where you go like, well, and do you know it for yourself of going like, oh, I need to do this and this to get shake some of the rust off before I perform?
Yeah, I think what gets rusty is like your listening skills a little bit.
Yeah, because when you go away, you stay
I stop
quiet.
Listening to everyone. Yeah. I just talk. No, I just think that like. Part of it as well is like cyclical, like the panic of feeling rusty makes you more panicked. Therefore, you make dumber moves because you're like panicking. So I just think that it's like anything. It's just like, okay, if I was like to not run for a week, I'd get it in my head. I'd be like, oh, I don't want to run. Like, oh God, I know what it's like because at 3 miles, I'm going to get really tired and I want to get, okay, well, I'll just try. Whereas if I'm just running every day, it's just like, oh, this morning I'll go for a run. It's just like, I'm not even going to think about how tired I'm going to be at mile three or like if the weather is too hot or whatever. And so I feel like it's like that with improv. Like if I don't do it for 3 months, not only do you get in your head about not doing it, but also you do. I mean, you're literally not exercising the muscle where someone, I mean, whatever, you can do bits and do jokes, but like, it's just.
Well, how long do you think it will take? Because
to
like
be
just
terrible?
Like no, just no. Like running. If you run every day,
yeah.
But you run every day for a set amount of time,
yeah.
If you take a week off, you know you should at least stretch,
yeah.
But you know you could run,
yeah. No,
so,
yeah.
So to when do you think? If there is a timeline, is there a timeline for you that you go like, if I've done this for this amount of blank time, I can take a week off and just walk on stage, or I can take 2 months off. Let's say, how long would you have to be doing improv for you to take a full month off, and then Monday morning fly in, Monday afternoon fly in, and do a Herald that night? How long would you have been on a Herald team for or been doing improv for?
I don't know. I think probably now I could do that, but I think that
cocky.
No.
I'm just kidding.
No, but I think that I don't think I'll ever... I think technically I could, because also you get really excited.
Sure.
Like, when I came back on Friday, last week Thursday, I went home and I came back last week Thursday and did a show on Friday.
Uh-huh.
And I was so excited about being back with my team and doing a show that I could do it. I just think that like the nerves of it, I don't know, maybe it would take me like 10 years to not feel nervous with that.
Yeah.
I could do it. I don't know if that ever goes like feeling a little bit, having those butterflies.
You still have butterflies doing shows.
Yeah.
Every show.
Not like, oh, I'm going to throw up, but yeah, definitely. You just don't know. Like sometimes you also, there's times where I'm like, oh, I'm feeling great. This is going to be a great show. And then you just get stumped. Like you just go out there and something doesn't click, or you're more tired than you thought you were.
Yeah.
Or you didn't realize that person who rubbed you the wrong way earlier, like it's still on your mind and you're like on that back line, you're trying to just be in this, but for some reason your mind isn't quite staying with what you're watching.
Yeah. Do you, what is your favorite, when you come back from a trip or doing other things that you love or your career, when you come back to do a show, what is it that you appreciate the most, do you think, being on stage? Like, is there a moment on stage that you go like, ah, this is the reason I'm back, or this is what I love? Do you think you can pinpoint? It could be one thing, it could be a number of things, it could be everything, but like...
I think it is when someone on the team makes a move that is so them, you roll your eyes. You know, when someone does a move and you're like, oh, classic whoever. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and you're just like... That is, you know people so well from being on it, from doing this make-believe with them.
Yeah.
That you get to know, because you know a lot about someone from their sense of humor. So, like, that makes me feel like, I don't know, it feels like so intimate to be like, oh, that is such a so-and-so move.
So it's just like a here we go again.
Yeah,
kind
of, yeah. Uh-huh. But it's like really fun. Like, it's fun. And it also is, I think it's also nice, being so far away from home and it's hard for everyone. Most people aren't at home and making friends with people, and then realizing in that moment, like, I really know these people. Like, if I play with them, I not know them as in they're predictable, the moves, but like, I know what I can say to make this, like, they'll pick up what I'm putting down.
Right.
And that feels really good. And it's unlike anything else. Like, I don't think there's ever been an acting job where I'm like, oh, great. That was such a, oh, that when they said that button or when they did that thing, like, you just never feel that connected to people, for me personally, in any other setting, performing wise.
Even sketch.
Absolutely, even sketch.
Yeah.
You're
just talking about just improv in general.
Yeah.
Long form
improv. Sketch. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love sketch. And like I said, I was doing that first. I love that. I grew up watching a lot of sketch, but it's not the same.
Do you love improv more than sketch?
100%.
100%
more. Because I just do, like, it's not like I love doing sketch, but nothing is more thrilling than doing improv.
Yeah.
Sketch is fun, but obviously part of the thrill of improv is that it's not mapped out for you.
Yeah.
Like the same thing that is the high is the low of not knowing how a show's going to go.
Yeah.
Sketch, you don't know how the show's going to go because the audience, you might have like, same with them, you might have like a tired audience, you might have this, you might have that, but there's also nothing, you're locked into it. So if the sketch is going poorly and people don't like it, it's like, you're in for this.
But that moment that you're talking about where somebody on your team does the classic whatever thing, and you can roll your eyes and go like, I know this person so well that they're going to do this. So at that point, as an improviser, what do you like to do, if you're in the scene with them, let's say it's you and somebody that you know really well, and all of a sudden they do a classic move.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if I'm doing a scene with Billy Merritt and I'm like, well, here's a classic Billy Merritt move.
Yeah.
So for you, if that happens, what do you do? Do you play into that classic move? Do you try to move them into a different way? Do you...
I don't know. I mean, if that classic move is perfect for what we're doing, like, you know what I mean? If they make a move and it's like, oh, that's exactly what I thought you would do, and that would continue, like, that helps the scene, then we'll play into it. But there are a couple moments where, like, you know, something, someone will do something and you're just sort of like, you kind of have to register that you clocked it, but be like, this is not, we can't follow this thing. Like, we can't let this derail us.
Why?
Well, I think it's probably different when you're on a Harold team and when you're not, because I think when you're on like a permanent team, I guess, for lack of a better word, you can...
Yeah, my team is permanent. The smokes is never going away, y'all.
You guys got tenure, so...
Yeah.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, you can maybe follow that a little bit more. But I think, obviously, if you're doing a Harold, if that's not where it's going, you have to be mindful, especially because doing a Harold, you know, UCB classes are geared towards Harold night. And so doing a Harold, you are sort of the example of, you're the example in practice.
Do you feel that?
Not like I'm up there being like, look at this.
I know, but when you're up there, Do you feel the students watching you as a learning tool?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes some of them are writing in the front row.
Fuck, isn't that
pencil
crazy?
Pencil and paper. Yeah. It makes me want to say, don't do that. Like,
sure.
You can't, like, I mean, obviously, because I went to shows watching what should be done, but yeah. it's a number of shows, you'll see people, and they always sit in the front.
Yeah.
Always with a pencil and paper.
Like. We put them there. Especially your first month, we put people in the front row just to have a piece of paper and pen. It's usually just like an Etch-a-Sketch, too, so they're not, it's just sand.
Is someone actually being paid? The only person being paid to do it right?
It's audience members. They're getting intern credit. No, but yeah, it's crazy, right?
Yeah, it's crazy to think that people are watching me and learning or attempting to learn.
Yeah.
Because I still feel like I'm learning.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, do you remember any moments where people are taking notes that you did a bad show and or a bad scene and you can still remember that scene or that moment?
I don't remember like a bad show and then someone was taking notes. Honestly, I really feel like I've had obviously some bad shows. Sometimes you have a bad show, like obviously as you know, like the show is not bad, but personally you're like, ooh,
yeah,
I had a terrible show.
Right.
I've had a couple of those, but I think I'm trying to think of. I probably felt worse about shows last year, only because I was new and felt more pressure.
Why did that pressure go away? What takes the pressure away?
I think part of it is getting a second year, is being like, oh, I must be doing something right to be given a second year when there's so many people that I think are incredible. Often, a lot of people that I think are better than me who haven't got a second year or a third year or fourth year or whatever it is. So some of that goes away of being like, well, I may not think I'm the best, or mm-hmm. You may never feel like people should be learning from you, but clearly I'm doing something that has earned me a second year.
And are there things that you maybe not pat yourself on the back for, but you know you do as an improviser that not people can learn from, but that keeps you on?
Yeah.
Keeps you on a team or keeps you playing?
Yeah. I think I'm... Yeah, I guess we can talk. I was going to say, could I talk about it? Yeah, obviously. I think I'm good. There are things, and I see. Also, I think this is the thing. I think I see in the second year how teams are put together to be like to be an ensemble, like where people have strengths and weaknesses. I think what I'm good at, and I think it's something I've been good at in class, is like I think I'm good at supporting, and I think I can see when an edit needs to be done.
Uh-huh.
I think that, I mean, it sounds kind of like, sometimes I think it sounds so silly, like, I edit well, but like, because it sounds like, well, anyone could do that. Like, anyone
could be an editor. But nobody does it.
But no one does, like, not that no one does it, but I think that, like, that is often my strength.
Yeah.
And I think that I can see timing well, and I can see when it's time to like get out of something.
Got it.
Sometimes quicker than other people, and so I personally feel like that's my strength. Someone else might be like, nope, that's not, but that's what I feel, and I feel good about that. That though sometimes is like a double-edged sword, because sometimes you're like, I'm the editor, that's my job, like hopefully no one else can do this job because that's what's keeping me on this scene.
No, I mean, you know, like obviously there's a lot of things, but there's always things that, you know, you feel like you're good at, and there's also things that you see in other performers that you don't necessarily do that often, like and it usually gets a little on that nerdy side, so it's like oh god, I love that this person always plays like this. Do you have not necessarily one improviser, but a style of improv or a style of playing that sometimes you go like, oh, I don't necessarily play like that, but I wish that was part of my repertoire, or I do it every once in a while. I wish I did it more.
Yes. I feel like I really respect improvisers who play... who just play subtly and slowly and don't panic. Mm-hmm. And it does sound like kiss arsey, but you do that well. But in general, like I see people who, I don't know, they just like, it sounds so silly, but just don't panic. There's just no, they never break a sweat. If it's slow, it's like, it's slow. Just, you, we're not going to panic and switch gear and make it fart. Like, this is a, we're playing this slow.
Right.
And then you wait for something and it becomes, it's so good and it was so worth the wait. And it would have been so much more, it would have been, the effect would be so much less if midway it switched gears and was like, funny thing now. It's just
right.
being patient. And I think that I'm learning that. But I think that in general, like in real life, I talk a lot and front load a lot anyway.
Yeah.
And so that's something that I want to learn in my improv, to sort of like slow it down. I also think you get more of an opportunity with that, not necessarily on Harold Knight, because we are still learning on yeah. Harold Knight, and there's a form, and there's a very clear form that we have to adhere to. So, you know, you need to know the game straight away going out of first beat so we can play it in second beats. Whereas it's different if you're doing a montage, or even obviously so different if you're doing a mono scene where you can really like sit in something for a while, and like that thing that's funny can come 4 minutes in.
Yeah.
Whereas that's the end of the first beat.
Right. So you're so used to just so focused on the Herald.
Right now, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, I love doing...
Do you like the Herald, by the way?
I do. I actually really, really like it.
It's like 2 years in.
Yeah.
You can either be starting to be a little fed up with it. Plus, you did it in all your classes.
Yes.
So it's a lot, and you're still doing it.
I love it.
Okay.
But I like structure.
Is there a part of the Herald that you weirdly love getting to? Like, are you like, oh, I can't wait to get to this first group game? Or do you like openings? Do you like...
I actually love openings.
You do?
All of them. Well, I don't necessarily... Although, I never used to love Sound of Movement. But then my old team, we started doing this, like, weird organic Sound of Movement, and I loved that.
Uh-huh.
But I love openings. I even love Pattern Game, and I've always loved even watching them. And that's the worst part for most audience members, is watching.
Yeah.
But I think it's just the cultivation of something out of absolutely nothing.
That you still love.
That I really love.
Yeah.
I think that's why I really love organic stuff. Not necessarily, I mean, obviously Word and Go is organic, but like, I don't know, I think improv is so great because so much comes from absolutely nothing.
Uh-huh.
It's so unique in that. Like, it's just a bunch of different minds coming together, and then someone saying,
it's 8 people, I guess,
yeah,
trying to like focus on one idea,
yeah, which is super tough,
yeah,
but
in front of an audience,
in front of an audience,
on stage, yeah, with a bunch of people with notebooks,
with a clock going,
yeah, and a person in the booth giving you notes,
yeah, and then maybe people watching from the side that you know are on the Harold committee,
yeah,
if not
the
AD.
Feel? What does that feel like?
Well, we got the email, 2 weeks ago that Harold auditions had been announced.
Uh-huh. Does that scare you?
Yeah, 100%, of course. Immediately you seize up. First of all, my first thought was, it's too soon. Because, apparently it's not, it's just been announced early. The auditions aren't any earlier. They just were announced earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrifying because it also feels like all of a sudden there's blood in the water. Like,
yeah.
It's like, you notice that as soon as auditions are announced, shows are more packed.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that be performers watching more on the side,
yeah,
coaches watching more on the side, students watching, it does feel like blood in the water. It feels
and
like.
And what's your advice to some of these people that are going to be trying to get on teams this time through?
I don't know. I always find it hard because I always feel like,
you don't want them to take your job?
No. No, I always feel condescending. You know when people, because there's always inevitably after the Harold auditions happen and it's announced, there's always someone who sends an email being like, hey guys, if you didn't get on, like, you know, there's plenty of other things you can do. And that's,
sure,
it's helpful, but it's also like, if you don't get on a team, you're also like,
you
yeah,
feel like shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you don't want to hear that. You don't want to hear people who are on teams tell you like, hey, keep trying. Like, but it's true. That's literally, that's a fact. You have to keep trying. My advice is just, I guess, if you can, relax and don't be too, I mean, it's hard. It's like, what can you say? I would say relax and don't be too attached to the outcome. Right. But that's so much easier said in theory, because I wasn't attached to the outcome, but it's because I didn't think I had a chance. So right. I was like in a unique position.
Yeah.
Like some people who are auditioning have auditioned for the third time, right. or they're on mesel teams, or like they're so ready.
Yeah.
And so it's like, this is my year. Whereas yeah. for me, I was like, I think I'm doing good work. I feel sure. like I'm doing pretty good work. Yeah. I'm really dedicated to this. I'm going to go for it. But I'm not like, I don't even know.
Most you don't people have the pressure on yourself of you deserve it yet.
Yes. And I yeah. also, you know, I think I came from a unique perspective where I didn't do improv in college. I didn't know about UCB until 6 months before I took a class here.
Right.
I didn't know all the performers' names. I hadn't been following people from New York. So I didn't have the pressure of like, this team is everything. Being on a
Got
team
it.
Is everything to me.
Right.
Like, I loved it and absolutely wanted to be on a team, but I didn't have years of like watching SNL and then being like, that person was at Groundlings, that person was at UCB.
Sure.
Like, you know,
yeah.
some people before they even step foot in this class have like 10 years of UCB knowledge.
Yeah.
And I never had that.
Yeah,
which
yeah,
I think
yeah.
put me at an advantage.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's like
or
advantages
advantage and disadvantage, because yeah. I also sometimes feel like when people say things or say comedians, I'm like, who now?
Yeah.
Because I feel like sometimes when you go to the comic book shop and the nerds are mean to you.
Right.
Like sometimes yeah. I feel like that where people
you shouldn't be a comic book hero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're like, oh, I don't know this. Or you're like, oh, I like this.
But that's what makes each team a team as well. Yeah. Like the different walks of life, the different ways
yeah.
that they're coming from. Do you coach teach yourself?
Yeah, I coach occasionally. I don't teach.
So is coaching a regular thing for you, or is it somewhat?
I mainly like sub in for people.
How did, it's not do regular. You like? Is it fun?
I love coaching.
You do, right?
Yeah, a little bit of it feels like, I don't know, maybe you feel like this teaching. A little bit sometimes feels like, man, what are they paying me for? Like, I'm just sitting here watching them do make-believe. But we yeah. all love it. Like, I did. I'm happy to pay coaches multiple nights of the week. So
yeah.
it's not really. But I really do love coaching, because I also think I learn a lot from coaching.
Yeah.
What's
one thing that you learned coaching that you started doing in your performance because you said it out loud and you realized that maybe you needed to do it, or that is part of your philosophy?
Yeah, okay, what's the thing I learned coaching? I think a big thing I learned coaching, which I feel like I knew before, but like you really see in action coaching, is like not looking crazy confused on that back line. Like,
yeah.
you know what I mean?
yeah.
Like, sometimes, like, because then I think the audience don't have as much faith in you. Like, sometimes when you're coaching, you're just the coach, you're just one person sitting on the couch.
Yeah.
And you see people on that back line and they look in pain.
Oh, man.
Like, so in pain trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think even just like, just pick a stance and a face that you think is like, looks fine.
Yeah.
like, go
pick,
with that. Like,
pick a standard face and posture
yeah.
and fake it until you go out and do a scene.
I think so. Like, choose a different thinking face.
That's hilarious.
Because I do sometimes think that, like,
choose a different thinking face.
yeah, because sometimes you watch, when you're coaching, you watch a back line and they look like,
terrified.
Really terrified.
Yeah.
And I think it doesn't instill confidence. And I think it doesn't instill confidence in the people watching.
Yeah.
Because if you're watching it and you're like, God, this needs support. God, this needs support. And you see people looking terrified, you realize, oh, they don't know what to do. Whereas if people are standing there just like watching, you're like, oh, they're thinking of a good thing. It's
yeah.
going to come. Something good is going to come. It's
that's
so silly,
funny.
But it's such a small thing. But I think that like, it makes a difference that's probably like me coming from like a theater background, but it makes sense to me in terms of like, your audience are there for you to entertain them and to go on a ride with you. And
yeah.
so if you look terrified or you look like you hate it, they're going to hate it. Like
yeah.
If you're like, oh God, this is dumb. I look so dumb being a fucking jellyfish. Then they're going to be like, oh my God, that girl looks so dumb being a jellyfish.
Right.
Whereas
yeah.
if you're committed to that or you're like, I know this is the best jellyfish.
Yeah.
Then they're like, man, that jellyfish was weird, but she was really going for it.
Yeah. You still look dumb.
Yeah, you still look dumb.
But like
objectively,
so dumb.
So dumb.
But if the other seven people that are playing with you don't think you're dumb,
yes.
you're fine.
Yeah, same thing with coaching. If they're not all looking at you like, why is she doing the jellyfish?
Yeah.
Then
it's crazy.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you grab from like your coaches or teachers that you go like, ooh, if I'm coaching, I gotta make sure I mention this, or this is a thing that I know helped me that I'm going to try to, you know, pass the knowledge on?
Yeah. Say it so you can play it is something that I was told by a coach. And that is something that I say to people, and that is something that...
What do you mean by that? Or what does that mean?
Like, say the game so you can play the game. So you can, like, literally restate what someone has said. So if someone says, I rob stores because I believe that I should have everything or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And literally being like, okay, you truly believe, you rob stores because you honestly believe that it is your right to have whatever you want. And that's just a, like a wink to everyone now. And then, you know, them saying, yeah. And then they have to double down, because I think, as I was taught, like, then they have to justify it.
Yeah.
But also then we know the game that we're about to play, and then we know the game that we're going to continue to play.
Right.
And I think that, like, sometimes in the beginning, people want to think that improv is more magical than it is.
Yeah.
Like you're just going to know what I'm thinking. I'm just going to know what you're thinking. And then all six of those people are going to know what we're thinking and be able to help us out. Whereas that's never going to be the case. It's like being like, what am I thinking now? Like, no one knows.
Yeah.
So I think just to say it, say what is happening, or, you know, or the flip side, I'm the type of person who da 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 da. Then we can all start playing it. Then we all know. It's the same. I mean, it's kind of the thing that you're taught when you do beat the hell out of the game. Like, yeah, you say that thing and then we just keep playing that thing. But I do think sometimes there is, in the beginning, because watching improv looks like, it seems like magic. It is kind of magic watching improv, that you think it's all magic, but even magic has technique. Like, of course, it's all technique.
Yeah. And I mean, magic is all technique.
It's all technique. There's no magic. Yeah. There's no magic. But that's the same as improv. Like, yeah. There's magic in that. It's great that all these people can come together and make something funny.
Sure.
But there's no magic. Like, no one just knows what anyone's thinking. I feel like no matter how long you've played with them,
yeah,
you can't know exactly what they're thinking unless they tell you. It's like a relationship.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So then the idea of just say it so that you can play it makes sense.
Yeah.
Is that your favorite part of playing in a scene?
Is like saying the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that your favorite thing? Is just, do you like, you know how like it's like, ah, some people love to justify. Some people love to just do a character choice.
Yeah.
Some people love starting with a physical thing. If I was to watch a show that you were in, Kirby, what would make me go classic Kirby? because it's something you love to do.
Well, I think what would be classic Kirby would be I'd call someone a weird name.
Okay.
Like if the name was Amanda, I'd make the name Shamanda.
Uh-huh. That's classic. That's me rolling my eyes at you.
It's definitely you. I think that's the thing that the team rolls my eyes. I just think it's fun. Like,
yeah,
it's more fun that someone's called Shamanda than Amanda.
That is more fun.
that's probably a thing that I do all the time. I do love to justify. I don't know if I'm always the best at it because you get carried away with other things. But I do love when someone challenges me on something and says, you really think this thing. What I have to get better at is going, yes, XYZ, and then shutting up. Because I'll go, XYZ, I'll start the alphabet again and go through even more reasons. And then I think I lose the original reason, which I think is something I see loads of people do.
So you're over-justifying.
I think I over-justify.
Yeah.
Which I think is just as bad, because then everyone's like, well, what do we grab?
Yeah.
What is she really saying?
Yeah. Don't you? Yeah.
But it's tough.
Yeah.
It's so tough because sometimes I get very confused between like, I don't think I'm over-justifying. I think I am digging into that justification or explaining why that justification is.
Yeah.
But then I'm just diluting it more. Or so I'm told after in notes.
Right. But that also depends on who's giving you notes. It's so weird when you think about this.
It's so...
As a whole.
Yeah.
It's like, if I am coaching your group, I might be laughing at different things than a different coach would be...
Yeah.
Laughing at that same rehearsal.
Yeah.
If you like tag me out and put a different coach in, they're going to give you different notes because their point of view is different.
Yeah.
So it's so...
It's so interesting, because also if you look at teams, it's like a director in a movie. Like you could take whatever movie and have two different directors and the movie will be completely different. Yeah. Just giving them the blank script. And that's the same with a coach. Like,
right.
If you look at, like, I think every team I've been on, when we switch coach, we switch the way we play.
Yes.
It's inevitable.
It's crazy.
So it's funny because we talk about, like, team voice and who a team is. But a lot of that team voice is influenced by who is...
Your coach.
Who is your coach?
Yeah.
Who is sort of elevating aspects of that
right.
voice.
Which is also why it's like, take different teachers or switch your coach up.
Yeah.
So that you do have a voice as
yes.
a group first or
yeah.
or somewhat.
And it's not just like a weird acting class where you have like a guru
yeah.
and you're only listening to what they say and that you don't know your identity outside of the things that they say are funny and not funny.
Right, yeah. Like I remember having people that would take my 401s and my advanced studies and I'm like, get out of my class. Just because... A, we have a different sense of humor, and I do find you funny, but I don't know if I can help you.
Yeah.
Because your sense of humor is different from my sense of humor, so I can find you funny.
Yeah.
But my notes are not going to be helpful.
Yeah.
Because my notes are just going to be general notes.
I think
all notes are general notes, to be honest.
Yeah. I just started thinking about that song. Do you remember that song in your class? Boys Just Want to Be Boys?
I do not remember that. How do you remember a song?
Because,
what is a song from the class?
Because you thought it was so dumb, because, and that's why it stuck with me. Because it was, we were doing a warm-up maybe, or just like an end of class where we were making up songs. And the song went, boys just want to be boys, and boys just want to be, you don't remember?
I don't
It stuck
remember.
With me. It
why?
Stuck with me for like 2 years of this.
Really? I don't get it. What's so funny?
I don't know, but in the moment you found it really funny and it made me feel good that I'd made you laugh. And in the moment you found it funny and it stuck with
oh,
me
whoops.
For over 2 years.
You sang a song called Boys Just Want to Be Boys?
Maybe I just got you on a day where you were like, I'm tired.
No, it was probably very funny.
2.5 years ago.
I like that you're still laughing at it, though,
at
your own bit.
I'm laughing because it was dumb, but I'm more laughing because we were all making up songs, but you thought it was so dumb. It made me laugh so much. It was great.
The dumbest things
that's
make
a long
me
time.
Laugh in the best ways, though.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's exactly what it should be.
That's exactly what it should be.
Whatever is the most fun in the moment is what you should be
yes,
doing.
Yes, yeah.
And yeah, and which is all of this stuff.
Yeah. I think that's maybe what I'm nervous about. You know when you say, like, what am I nervous? It's just the fun. Like, it's so much fun to do this, and working is hard. Like, whether that's whatever work you do, even if you're doing the thing that you love, the thing you came here for, like
yeah.
acting work, it's hard. It's, like, it's grueling. You like, no one's laughing on set necessarily
yeah.
when you're doing
so you're...
Even if it's funny, you're locked into something. Like, it's just, you miss that fun.
By the way, yep. if you know this or not know this, listening to this podcast, Kirby is on a new show that's going to be starting. Is it a mid-season or is it
mid-season
show? And is this your first like series regular part on a show like that?
It's my second, but the first one didn't go.
So
yeah.
this is the first one that is going
that's,
to series.
Is going to series.
So
yeah.
experiencing that, and you know, and in that nerd. Improv mentality. What aspects of improv do you wish were in our regular job? Because there are aspects of that when I go to work that I go like, oh man, I wish there was a little bit more of this group game mentality going on right
yeah.
now. So it's like, what is there something like that you go, well, this is why I appreciate improv so much?
Yeah, I think what I appreciate is, and maybe not necessarily on this job because I'm moving to another place, so we'll get to know each other pretty well. But I
yeah.
think that every single thing that you watch on TV could be better if people just knew each other a little better.
Yeah.
Like, every single show could be funnier, smarter, better if the cast didn't do one read-through 2 weeks before they shot and then just shot together.
So you mean the actors knew each other better?
Yeah.
Not the characters knew each other.
No.
Yeah,
yeah. If the actors knew each other better. Like, you watch things where the actors do know each other. And, like, even, like, you watch something like Wet Hot American Summer. And no matter what you think about, like, the reboot, they just all, people know each other.
Yeah.
And so the silliest things are funny. And you see people finding the silliest things funny. Like, you see a joke that, like, maybe your parents wouldn't even find funny, or whoever outside, even outside this community might not find funny, but they all find it funny. They get, like, I just think that anything is better, everything is better when people get to know each other, because you're comfortable. And
it is getting to know each other better, but really what that is, especially within the way what I'm hearing from you, which I 1,000,000% agree with, that happens in improv that doesn't happen in our acting life, is trust.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily knowing each other. It's just like, oh, I trust that I can walk on that stage, not know what the fuck is going to happen next.
Yeah.
And you're going to make me look great, and I'm going to make you look great, and we're going to laugh about it.
Yeah.
And after the show's done, we're going to wash our hands of it, go grab a beer, call it a night.
Yeah.
And still be positive with each other.
Yes.
Does not happen in our careers, because that person's career is based off of how you treated them that day, mm-hmm. or how that scene went. So they might be mad at you tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that's what, and that's a lack of trust that I was trying to make you look good that day.
Yes.
And I think that's an aspect of improv that has to carry over and does when you start working with a bunch of peers.
Yeah.
Too.
And also, you know, with improv, it, like you were saying, like the better you look, the better I look. Like that's why I don't think I've ever had a terrible show on Harold Knight. And that's part of that is that, like,
I've seen a couple.
Like, I think personally I've had bad shows.
Yeah.
But I don't think any of the shows are write-offs. But that's because the people on my team have never left me hanging,
right.
either team. They have always, like, I have always felt taken care of. Or felt, yeah.
Yes.
That's a weird word. On both my teams, I've always felt like if something is going a little way, we don't know what's happening, someone will always jump in. Like, there's no one that is like, you know what, this is a sinking ship and I don't want to look bad. Like, there's never, I've never, ever, ever felt like that. Whereas, just in general, the way a TV show is set up, the fact that, like, you're in different positions on the call sheet even, is like, there's an instant hierarchy. And there are some people that want to look better and want to, it's not like, if we all look good, if you look good, I look good. There's not,
yeah,
really that.
There's,
it's like,
that.
If I look good, I look good.
If I look good, I should look good because I'm number one on the call sheet. Yeah.
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 Whereas there's no, you know.
There's no number one.
There's
on
no
that.
Number one on the call sheet.
Yeah.
Because also, even if you are number one for one show, if you look the best in one show, you get the most moves, the next show might be shitty. Like,
yeah.
So there's no number one guaranteed. Whereas, you know, and you're not being treated differently. You
right.
know, on a Harold team, like, you don't really get anything for being on a Harold team. You're not being treated differently. So I think there's just a level of, I mean, obviously you get stuff, you know what I mean? But it's not like, you know, a TV show. You can see there's a noticeable difference between the way number one on the call sheet is treated and number four, or then background or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas it's not like that in this. And so people don't, there's not as much ego, though there is always ego because people are people.
Right.
There's not as much.
Do you feel, I guess a change in your ego a little bit, or a change of being on a team for 2 years now?
Yeah.
Or just a confidence?
A confidence, yeah. I mean, I guess, I don't think it's negative to say a change in ego.
Yeah.
I think it has a negative connotation, but I don't think it is necessarily negative.
Right.
I think I feel more self-assured.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, the funny thing about that is, should I be cut, that goes away. Like, that even in itself is not permanent.
Right.
Like, should you get cut, you're like, oh, I must have. In your mind, you're like, oh, I did shit forever. I was terrible. Like, now I'm cut. I didn't do enough. But yeah, there definitely is a change in, like, and just at UCB, we're a small community and people recognize you. Like, I don't think I've ever been recognized for anything I've done on TV, but I once was exercising in Griffith Park and this lady was like, great show last night.
So cool.
And that made me feel so amazing. And so there is sometimes a change. Like, the longer you're on, you just become a face that people see more.
Yeah, and they see you as a UCB person.
They see you as a UCB person, which is in itself is you feel like you're in,
yeah,
I mean, we're in such good company.
Yeah.
That is, because I remember seeing UCB people as well. You know what I mean? Like, you know, being in the line and just watching someone walk up with their headphones in to go to Harold Knight and being like, oh, I'm going to watch them.
Sure. So you took 401 twice?
Yeah.
And then you took advanced study?
Yeah, I actually got, after my first 401, I got into advanced study, but I felt like I wanted to do another 401. So
why?
I did another 401. I didn't feel, I think I just wanted to be, just to have more practice. I felt like, because in my mind, advanced study was sort of like, which it's not at all. I want to be clear, but it felt like a waiting room for Harold's and for auditions. Like yeah. that's where you know, like you were really ready, and I wanted to learn more, and I also wanted to learn from a different teacher. I've had yeah. different teachers the whole way, and I wanted a different teacher, so I did another one. And yeah. I was also an intern, so I was lucky enough that I had worked those, did work study, so I'd work those classes off rather than having to actually put down the money again.
Right, so you were able to like open up and enjoy yeah. it a little bit more.
Exactly, yeah. yeah.
Do you think that's beneficial to double up on a 401?
Yeah, but not with the same teacher.
Yeah.
But 100%. I think it's... because it goes by so fast uh-huh. as well. 8 weeks goes by so fast. You only get up a couple times just because there's a bunch of people in the class. I think it's beneficial to double up on 401 or 201.
Yeah.
I think those are the two that no one, especially, I mean, people expect to double up on 401 because they don't necessarily get into advanced study.
Do people really expect that though? Because I know that people no, get sometimes upset.
People get upset, but
they
people
don't
have.
Get- Yeah. Accepted into advanced study after their first 401.
Oh, yeah. People are upset, but people understand that it is a thing that you don't... Because there is like, hey, you might not get accepted. I think most people do get upset if they don't, or at least they're just a little bit rubbed the wrong way. Because again, you're looking at the people next to you and being like, well, why did they get in? I felt like yeah. I did, or whatever. And also, no one, you don't really
know... Yeah, but to
be
honest...
Yourself, you know?
Right.
Like, you do, but terrible people don't know they're terrible.
Terrible people do not know they're terrible.
You know, like, it's like when you watch those, I was listening to this thing on NPR. There's a condition, I can't remember the name. It's basically you don't know what you don't know. But this condition is that, like, the worse you are at something, the more ignorant you are about how bad you are at that thing. It's like, yeah. it's an actual condition where, not condition as in, like, well, I guess it is a condition. I don't mean that to have, like, a negative, like, mental stigma. But, like, there is a condition or, like, they've diagnosed that, like, you don't, so they did this thing. Can I talk about this? So these scientists did this test, and they got a bunch of people together. They made them do the test, and then they asked them like how well they scored. And typically, the people that scored higher thought they did worse. They were like, "No, I didn't do as well," and they scored higher. But the people who were overconfident and were like, "I aced that test," did worse because. The ignorance of not being able to gauge how well you did plays into the fact that you're not very good at that thing.
Wow. Got it.
That's really good. It's on so this American
that,
Life.
So that means that there's probably... So you're saying that there's some terrible people that don't realize that they're terrible.
Yeah.
And they...
need, for sure. In everything in life.
Yeah. In everything in life.
Everything.
But in improv, too.
100%, because it seems like it's real easy.
Yeah. And I feel like... In a way, it's good to take a couple of different teachers because
yeah.
it also could be an opinion of that teacher who just doesn't get your sense of humor.
Exactly. That's why I think it is helpful, like, to do, if you can, every class with a different teacher.
Yeah.
So you're not pandering as well to what one person thinks is funny. You know, some people do, like, I've done three classes with this teacher, but
yeah.
you might be pandering to what they think is funny.
Right.
And not finding what you think is funny.
Sure.
So you don't really know what you think, what you find funny.
What you honestly think is
yeah.
funny.
Yeah. But also some people are terrible.
Yeah. yeah. There.
In everything in life.
There are some people that are just great at other things and
yeah.
just not improvisers.
Yeah. But also, you know, I think the main thing with improv is that if you don't love it, you shouldn't be doing it.
Why do you say that?
Because it's hard, and the only thing that you get out of it is the joy of doing it. And I think that now there has been, with sort of more of a, I think people are now seeing like a financial gain to doing improv because they're maybe putting two and two together and getting five. Like, they're seeing some of the people that they see on UCB stage working in other arenas.
Yeah.
And so they sort of feel like this is the step. Like, you get on a team, someone plucks you off and gives you a TV show.
Yeah.
And so I think that there are some people, like, I know someone who is like, oh, I don't really want to do another UCB class, but I should. And I was like, don't. Like, the only thing you can get out of it is fun.
Yeah.
And if you hate it, you're just going to hate, you're just going to resent it. You're paying a lot of money. And then if you hate it and then you're like, yeah, but I got to do it. I got to get on a team so that I get a TV show. Then when you don't necessarily get on a team, you're going to hate it even more. You're going
right.
to be so mad at it
yeah.
for not giving you everything it was meant to. Whereas if you love it and you don't get on a team, you're like bummed, But you have no choice but to come back the next year because you don't know what you would do with your life if you weren't doing improv.
Yeah. I feel 100% behind you on that. I feel like if you love this stuff, keep doing it.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then stop.
Yeah, stop
and
immediately.
I hope that there are some people out there who love doing this but don't see this as a career but just love improv.
Yeah.
So they can do their day job.
Yeah.
And then love doing this,
yeah.
And it doesn't have to, because I'm like, oh, what a great life that would be for them.
It's great. You know, when I was in London, so London has like a very small improv scene that is growing, but it's growing very quickly.
Uh-huh.
And I got to do some improv when I was out there on this trip, again, because I love doing improv.
Yeah.
And I was like, where can I do it? So I did some improv. And there was one guy who we were talking, a lot of improv in London is done above pubs. They'll be in the function room above a pub, which is kind of fun. And I was talking to him after, and he was one of the guys who I performed with him, and a lot of them, surprisingly, in London aren't actors doing it, which is very different, obviously, because LA is LA. He is a police officer and a negotiator. That is his job. He's a negotiator. And I thought, who better to do improv than this man who has such a high-pressure job that he then, on the weekends, can do something that means absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
He does it. It's just for the fun of having a lark with your friends, and then it's over and done and forgotten, and then you have a beer after, and then on Monday you have to go back to your job.
Right.
Like that is exactly what improv should be about. It's just a release.
And that person's going to end up being great.
Yes.
As he keeps doing it, because he has something else that he can go to.
Yeah. He also has a whole life to draw from.
Like, right.
How many people are police officers and negotiators?
Right. Oh, God.
I wish.
But, you know, some people are going to be actors, some people are going to be writers, and that's great, too.
No, that's great.
But, like, as long as you're looking at UCB as this fun thing that you can enjoy, and, like, you can listen to podcasts like this and enjoy that aspect of it without it just being work.
Yeah.
Or, like a stepping stone for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're going to get more out of it.
Yeah.
Great. Anything else, Kirby, that you want to plug or anything before you head out into the world?
Come see my Harold team, Nomi Malone, Mondays at either 8 p.m. or 9:30, Fridays at 6:30, or on Harold Late Night. Just check on the UCB website.
Great. And then your show will be?
Oh, my show will be on ABC, I think, airing in January.
Great.
It's called Downward Dog.
Downward Dog. Awesome. Yeah. So check that out as well. And that was a long form conversation. Tune in for the next episode when Kirby will be your host. Thanks to the UCB and UCBcomedy.com and this podcast network for having an awesome show like this. Cool. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.